Friday. Welcome to Joe, Lo, and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. The new Avengers trailer is out. Social media in chaos. I don't care much for it.
No?
I didn't watch it, so I, you know, what am I going to do? I'm going to come in and hype it up.
No.
I figure we're all talking about it behind the scenes.
We are? I know that one of us is.
Yeah.
There was a glancing comment, so that technically counts as being discussed behind the scenes.
Fair enough.
But here we are, Monster Friday show. Buckle up. Steve Atwater, two-time Super Bowl champ, at 6:30. At 7:18 this morning, 7:20, as we do each day this week and next week, you're going to have a chance to win a trip to Hawaii. Gary St. Jean at 8:30. Brandon Stokely, another two-time Super Bowl champ. He'll be at 9:10. Cam Inman at 9:30. Now, the big events. Beat the Bookie at 8:45. Lo versus Dibs at 9:45. And if you are interested, we do have two pairs of tickets to give away to the Raiders-Steelers game on Sunday at the Coliseum. That will take place at 8:45. Warriors-Bucks tonight. Niners-Broncos this weekend. We've got a million things to get to, but we're going to begin right here.
Mariota under center. Henry behind him. Hand off Henry to the left. Busting out to the outside. 10-yard line. 15-yard line. Oh, a stiff arm.
Wow.
15 to the 20. 25 down the sideline. Into territory for Jacksonville. He's still going. Henry is not going to stop. He goes all the way. 99 yards. Derrick Henry. That was magical.
Shout out Westwood One for the audio. Tennessee 30, Jacksonville 19. We're not breaking this game down because, quite frankly, we don't care. But we do care about Derrick Henry's 99-yard touchdown run, which was part of a night where the former Alabama product carried the ball just 17 times for a franchise record 238 rushing yards and 4 touchdowns. Henry averaged 14 yards per carry. His 99-yard touchdown run tied Tony Dorsett for the longest run in NFL history. And the big question today, which is also the Take Your Pick poll question, brought to you by FH Daily Chevrolet, up on the website at 957thegame.com. Did you start or sit Derrick Henry in week 14?
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's a sit for me. Had him on my team.
Womp, womp, womp.
We can give you this. You can go straight to the blue track if you want. It gets no more painful than 48 points on your bench, coach.
And wow.
Yeah, it's, you know, the good news for me is it's not the playoffs yet, and I am in first, so I'm going to go to the playoffs, but it hurts when you check the game, you click on, and you go, oh, they're up 30-2. I wonder what's happening in this ball game. And you look, and it's like, oh, God, on what, my bench.
What I
30-2.
OMB. Yeah. It was 30-2 when I joined that ball game.
Wow.
30
Jacksonville,
wow.
Shout them out, baby.
Wow. What I saw last night, Joe, the NFL is in trouble. And I know the NFL is wanting to go to the high-scoring offenses, and you wanted to see what the quarterback position, it's about the quarterback. I disagree. This league is going to have to do something because now the softness of the National Football League is getting ferocious. You've seen more 90-yard runs this year than you've ever seen. Guys aren't tackling. The game has gotten so soft. Guys can't wrap up because now it's become, like you said, you don't touch guys. Everyone wants to pass the ball. The game hasn't gotten, it's not physical enough anymore. Hell, Joe, I think high school kids can come out of high school now or college. You don't necessarily have to go to, I think it's harder to play in the NBA than it is in the NFL if you're a quarterback. Because I think now high school kids can go straight from high school to the NFL if you got a big arm, if you're a big kid, because of the fact you can't hit them. You can't slam them. You can't tackle them. You can't touch them. Think about where this game is going. I understand it's about scoring now, so why not let quarterbacks now come out when they're freshmen in college, if they decide to come out and go to the NFL? Why can't you? Because of the fact now the way the league is moving, you can't hit them. You can't hurt them. So it ain't about being physical and being tough anymore. There's a lot of kids 17, 18, 19, 20 years old that are very smart, that has athletic ability, that can stand in the pocket and do what they're doing. Last night, you seen Derrick Henry. You see the way that the National Football League, you saw the Houston Texans the other night, another 97-yard run. You're seeing now that guys' inability to tackle, they don't put an emphasis on it. The game is getting soft, and it's in trouble.
Wow. This segment was designed to just make fun of Dibs for about 12 minutes for not starting Derrick Henry, but now all of a sudden we're in it.
No,
we're
I love
so
it.
Deep in it right now. It's like Vietnam. I need the chopper to pull me. Where's Forrest Gump? I need Forrest Gump to put me on his shoulders and run me out of there.
Totally.
I've been shot in the buttocks.
I'm feeling better about Derrick Henry on my bench right now because I won't have to worry about fantasy football apparently anymore because football's over. Fantasy football's over.
Joe's like, okay.
Oh, man. I think you make some excellent points there. The idea of kids coming out of high school and going right to the pros, that's never going to happen. I see the point you're trying to make, but it's never going to happen. Your body needs to physically mature just to be ready to stand up against these guys. Like the human body, the human male body at 18 and then 19. I remember playing college football for a couple of years before transferring and just the jump from playing high school and then going to a Division III school and looking around and being like, damn, like there are some men around here. That's where you kind of put on that
I get it.
That man muscle.
You
and
know
then
what
you
I'm
jump
s-
to the pros. But I do get what you're
for
saying.
For the quarterback
Henry
position.
Henry last night, that was a joke.
It's a joke.
Push him out of bounds at some point. The first
cut
Stephon's
his legs.
One thing.
Just go and take his leg. I'm talking about the quarterback position. Now, because you got smart kids that are freshmen in college that are big enough, strong enough. Now, you don't have to get hit. You can't drop your helmet and hit them. You can't come at their legs. You can't slam them. A quarterback position now, is it that tough now for a kid that's smart, high IQ, that is a freshman in college? Is it that tough for the NFL? Not
I think it
position.
Is. Football I still think
IQ
it is.
Is
yeah, and
gun.
I think it's being able to assess the defense, like you're saying, football IQ. And I think about Mitchell Trubisky, a guy who had 13 starts in college, and he's come in and he still doesn't have a great ability to sit back and read the D, and he's getting by on just athletic ability.
But he's big, or he's not even a good – I mean, do you think he's a good quarterback?
No, but I think that had he stayed for 40-plus games in college, he would have a greater ability to break down defenses, see the disguise of a zone press or a blitz, and being able to break things down much more easily.
In high school, a lot of the great quarterbacks, how much do they really need to think? You watch tape on some of these kids, they are able to shred defenses
Agreed.
And make plays without even having to think. Then
Agreed.
You go to college, and you at least have to learn some nuance.
Agreed.
Different defenses, disguises, blitzes, and then you get to the NFL, and it's a whole new world. So mentally, maybe if you had that 1 year to sit and learn, I could see what you're saying. You come out at 18, 19 years old, you go pro, but you sit for a year and study, and then you make your debut. I think there's something to that.
Joe, it's all read routes now. It's not running. It's not necessarily reading the coverages, cover 4-6. It's speed, and guys are running through zones, and they're just running. You already said now the NFL is turning to Big 12. We had coaches.
This show said that almost a year ago,
absolutely.
And everyone just
laughed at us.
Misappropriated that from
you're
us.
Wrong.
You're wrong. No, Greg. You're crazy. Think about it, though. So now, if that's the case, I can take a freshman because of the fact now he doesn't got to read zones. The receivers are running their read routes, and all he's doing is throwing to places now. It's no longer that I got to know coverages any longer. The NFL's not about the coverages any longer. It's can you play man-to-man? Can you bump guys? And can you disguise? What can you disguise? It's about you go watch receivers now. It's not running the five route and the deep comeback. It's not route running.
They don't
any
run
longer.
Any of those anymore.
No.
They don't run any of those. It's really just about a bunch of guys crossing over the middle of the field and running in the space.
So that's my point. When you guys are sitting here saying, oh, he's got to read all these different things, it doesn't happen anymore, coach. The quarterback position is not a read. Quarterback position is not necessarily reading coverages anymore. The coaches need to know it for their own self, but now it's athletic ability. Guys aren't reading it. It's receivers that can run fast, and they're breaking open now. So why can't they?
All right, I think there are a couple things here that are interesting. Okay, number one, as a former player, do you like this version of the NFL?
No.
You don't like this?
Do
you hate it, or do you
I
just...
I don't hate it.
Right.
I don't hate it.
But
I,
you just don't like where the game has gotten to based on what you played and what you grew up watching.
You see 7, 8, 9 missed tackles consistently. You see guys now not wanting to put their heads in there. You see guys now, they got the outside shoulder free, and all of a sudden they're jumping inside, giving away outside contain, leverage. I can friggin' go out there and do what these guys are doing at 47 years old, coach. That's what's a shame about it. Yeah, these guys are faster, but they don't have any heart. Go see the Wizard. Have you watched the Wizard of Oz and a man never go get a heart? Dude, it's crazy. Please turn on the tape and watch guys now get out of the way. They'll make itself look like it was hard, and they'll jump out of the way and make it look like, oh, I messed up. No, they were afraid. They didn't want to play.
You really didn't like this game last night.
No, I turned it off after the first quarter, at second quarter.
Well, these are going to be good questions for Steve Atwater, who's going to join us at 6:30, because I believe he made a couple tackles in his day.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
A couple hits, I remember.
Word on the street is that he made a few plays.
Made some guys.
Old Steve brought his lunch pail.
This brings up another interesting point, then. If you're talking about the quarterback position, if I'm hearing this correctly, and I'm not going to say I disagree, but it's devalued a little bit.
Yes.
Right? It's not as if it really takes the Peyton Manning, whose head and shoulders and forehead above everybody else coming out of Tennessee, the ability to line everyone up, read the defense, make the changes, play the game with such precision. We don't see Jared Goff doing that. In fact, last year, we saw Sean McVay, he's still doing this, waiting until the last second to relay the play into Goff.
Yes.
So that Goff, like quarterbacks in the Big 12, doesn't have to think as much. So let me ask this. When Goff's contract comes up, do you go ahead and pay him $30 million a year, or do you go out and find a guy who you can just plug into the system?
I get a plug-in guy. I'm with you guys now.
Wow.
I think the
quarterback's becoming disposable.
Listen to this.
Like the starting pitcher in baseball with bullpenning, you know? You just don't need seven
solid
innings anymore.
Solid analogy,
you know?
Right there. Solid
you
analogy.
Don't. Think about these college. That's why I'm saying this kid from Oklahoma, he needs to wait. Go for 4 years? Freaking come out, make
You're
some
talking
money.
Talking about Kyler Murray.
Yeah, because the game has changed. You see it, guys.
Oh, the reverse Brandon Whedon and the reverse Chris Wanky, play football first, then go play baseball.
Yeah.
Why not?
Interesting.
I mean, you look at Lamar Jackson and what he's been able to do in Baltimore, basically just playing almost street ball,
street
you know?
Ball.
Running out, rolling right, faking the run, running and throwing. It's the new thing.
Come up close, I'm going to dip the ball over the top. Exactly. Come at me, boom, I'm just going to dunk it downfield. It's guys now. These read routes, they are not reading coverages. It's not precise route running anymore. It's friggin', okay, boom, you're running this. You're running that return route. In, out, I'm going to read you.
Well, you know what part of the problem is for the defense? They've been trained for years that all of their fundamental disciplines are based on those routes.
Yes!
Cover two is based on the idea that the corner's going to come up and the safety's going to be over the top and
yes.
they're going to cover that side of the field. Now that you're not running the corner route and the curl route and the out route and the flat route, suddenly those coverages mean
nothing.
Very little because guys are running through the coverage and exploiting big gaps in the secondary.
Bingo.
That's very well said on your behalf. Quickly, I want to touch on this as I continue to do little drive-bys on the Heisman Trophy vote, which is coming up tomorrow night. It's going to be fantastic because you've got a really good
tremendous.
Competition. Both guys, very deserving. Kyler Murray from Oklahoma, Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama, and you could even say Dwayne Haskins
two
from
tremendous
Ohio
players.
State. I continue to try to make the case for Tua because I believe recency bias is playing a huge role. I dug this stat up last night. Oklahoma this year, their offense, 578 yards per game. Sensational, right? Last year, 580 yards per game.
Wow.
It's not as if Mayfield to Murray did anything all that great. It's the system, and you plugged in a new quarterback, and he had a lot of success. Conversely, Alabama last year, 444 yards per game. This year, 528 yards per game, almost 80 yards more, 88 more yards per game. And from 37 points per game, they were like fifth in the SEC, to 47 points per game, first in the SEC. Keep that in mind when you sit there and you think about Murray shredding West Virginia and Texas when Tagovailoa went up against five top 25 defenses this year,
it's
including
close.
That Saturday nighter at LSU. As I make the case for one, I do think both are deserving.
Yep.
Whoever wins, it's not going to be one of those, the voters got it wrong. But I'm just very excited because for the first time in a few years, the Heisman has a ton of intrigue heading into Saturday night. Now, speaking of intrigue, tonight, Warriors at Bucks. Last time these two got together, it was a boating. But a boating in the wrong direction as the Warriors lost by 23. So what do we have in store for this evening? That is coming up next here on 95.7 The Game.
The baseball hot stove is heating up. And we have a man on the inside, John Morosi, exclusively on our airwaves.
I just think that given the atmosphere, I think it is more likely than not that Bumgarner's wearing a different uniform by the start of spring training.
For all the breaking news, keep it locked on 95.7. The Game. Joe Lowendibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
It's a Football Friday brought to you by Mancini's Sleep World, Golden State Lumber, and Harris Ranch Beef here on 95.7 The Game. As always, if you want to follow along with the conversation and have your voice heard, hit us up on the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795. Golden State Warriors conclude their five-game road trip tonight in Milwaukee. Tip time is 6:30. Probably should have had that written down so I didn't have to draw it out as I'm looking at the odds board. But sure enough, that's what ended up happening. 6:30 tonight right here on 95.7 The Game. The Bucks are a one-point favorite. Think about that for a second. No, Draymond Green, fine. Durant, Steph,
and Clay
on the road at Milwaukee, for as good as they are, and the Bucks are still a one-point favorite tonight. Bit of a revenge spot here because the last time these two got together, Dibs, a bit of a boating on behalf of the Bucks.
At home.
23-point win at Oracle over the Warriors.
Yes, and Milwaukee has one of the best records against the Warriors in the Steve Kerr era. They are 3-6, which doesn't seem great, but when you think about Steve Kerr with an 80% winning percentage, the fact that the Bucks have won 33% of the games in which they've played tells you that the Bucks have been a thorn in their side. And like you say, a boating earlier this year. They won at Oracle last year. So this is not a team that you can ever take lightly, certainly in this spot without Draymond, knowing exactly what they did to you earlier this year.
Yeah, I totally agree, Dibs. And I don't think that, I think when you look at this, what does that tell you about the Dubs' inability to score when it comes to the number twos? Because you're talking about three all-stars still on your team, three prolific scores on your team, and you're still an underdog in Milwaukee in a revenge spot, and you're the underdog. I think the Warriors have to look at this and say, wow. And that's what yesterday when we were having this conversation, is this team being feared anymore? Is this team scary anymore? Is the rest of the NBA catching up with them? This is the first time in several years that this team has been the underdog more than one time. This isn't they've been the underdog.
It's happening quite a bit this season.
Yeah.
I didn't know the line before we started the segment. Like, we started it and then I looked down. Obviously, I didn't even know what time it was starting.
Yeah.
The central time zone all out of whack.
Yeah,
you know how they do things in Wisconsin.
You knew the line.
If you see
though,
making
you
a murder, you can't trust anyone.
And the line, Joe, was more important than the
time. It's an 8:30 local tip too, which we can get into that another day. These 8:30 and 9 o'clock, like the college games. Duke has games at tip at 9. It's a joke, quite frankly.
Why? Get into it right now.
Too late. An 8:30 tip. And I'm not saying it's about
Friday,
the kids
though.
Because
it's Friday night, though.
It is Friday night, but 8:30, if you're going to a game that tips at 8:30, it really doesn't tip till 8:40, let's be honest. Now you're not done till 11:15. It's too late. If you're local and you want to watch a game on TV, it's too late. I understand it's Friday night, and I'm not going to play the kid card where, yeah. Oh, the children, what will
That's
the children
fine.
Do?
That's fine. You play the old man card.
Absolutely. If I... Oh, it's funny, isn't it, Anna?
It is. I'm playing the kid card. You can play the old man card.
So what's the actual...
Like a clown?
So how do you feel about like heavyweight title fights that start at midnight? UFC fights that start at like 11:45?
Ridiculous.
You think that's
the
ridiculous?
Joke, yeah. It's,
really?
No event should ever start that late.
Now, you are... Now, Dibs, you're being the old man.
Honestly?
A little bit.
As an athlete...
Friday, though.
As an athlete, and you have your rhythm, your circadian rhythm, you can't tell me that at 11 at night, you're going to be at your best. And
okay. Now
ultimately,
true.
If you want to put out the best possible product, you would want the athletes to be at their best. Forget the fact that I'm an old guy and I want to be in bed by 9. That's on me, and I get that. But an 8:30 tip, it's a joke.
Okay, just wanted to throw it out there.
He makes valid points when he's talking about that. But I know, as an athlete, I don't want to start a game at 8:30 at night.
What's the ultimate time to start a game? For you, don't worry about with a college, high school, pro. When do you want to play your sport? Apply your craft?
You know what? Anywhere from, honestly, from 5:30 to 7. Because anywhere
the cocktail hour.
Exactly. Because 7's not too late. You're ready to roll. Even Monday night games at 6, 7 o'clock, it's fine. 8:30 is a little late, but anywhere from five to seven, you're good.
How are the Warriors defending Giannis tonight? By the way, the over-under in this game is 240. So when I say defend, I'm using that term very, very loosely.
Right, they're not. Based on the over-under, they're not going to defend Giannis. Yeah. I think KD gets the first turn at it. And to me, for all this talk about Kevin Durant as an all-defensive type player, this is where you show it. If you really want to be first or second team all defense, which they don't have a third team, they don't have honorable mention, 10 guys are given all defensive designation. If you're KD, you tap Steve Kerr on the shoulder and you tell Ron Adams,
I want that man.
I got him.
Yeah.
I got him tonight.
That's what Michael, I take him. I got him.
Michael would guard him in the parking lot.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we know the story. He goes cigar on
exactly.
him.
He absolutely would have. He would have let him know flat out. So you got to figure then the scoring turns to Steph and Clay. Big nights for Steph and Clay on the offensive end. KD's got their back on the defensive end.
KD can hold him to 27. I'd be impressed.
Where's that number come from? Again, because, I have to ask that. You randomly come up with these numbers, and I find them fascinating. If he holds him to 27, you're impressed. So 28?
Because if you look at who he's playing and the guy that he's playing against, he can go down there in the post. He can go down there underneath on the rim, and we don't have necessarily a dominant big man. So now you got KD to go out there. If KD can hold this guy to 27 and under 30, that's good. That, to me, that's really good. That's why I'm pulling that number out. Dibs, would you agree or disagree?
I'm totally with you, because under 30 is great, but 25 is not reasonable, so you find the midpoint. He would have gone 27 and a half. But
right,
25
is not reasonable. If I would have said, 22 or 23, it's not reasonable.
Not possible.
That's what
Like paying Garoppolo $17 million.
Exactly. Or Kevon Looney 12 or whatever it was.
And you guys missed on that. You guys laugh now.
We didn't miss on anything. He got hurt. He's three games into his career as the franchise guy. It's not. It can't be determined yet.
Let's get back on where we're at. Let's get back on topic.
All right, so let me ask you something.
27.
These are the big coming out party games for Giannis. People who follow basketball, they understand who this guy is, but it's just now that people are starting to understand this is
a
legitimate MVP candidate.
I don't
want to
look at this woman's belly all the time.
Okay.
That's called Charmed. You don't like the show Charmed?
She's looking good, though, right now. I don't need to be looking at that right now.
Well, Dibs' job is the TVs, and you would suggest he's failing at that job?
Bad. Thank you.
It's on me.
And here's the hot stove. Six old guys sitting around a conference ballroom
Better
table
low?
Talking about.
Do you want to see any of their bellies?
A decision making in the modern game is the topic of conversation amongst a bunch of guys who aren't wearing ties, so they look dressed down.
Six
in their
white guys.
Bonkers.
Six white guys in blazers. And Lo's happy now.
You just put that on with no scrolling bottom, and you said, "What's happening here?" I'm like, "This is clearly a conversation about baseball." Baseball, maybe something to do with the Republican Party, just based on the outfits. Is that Rick Santorum? I don't know. This segment got away from us.
It did.
So what we're going to do is we're gonna take a deep breath, and we're going to talk to Steve Atwater, two-time Super Bowl champ, next here on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, someone, please take our money.
Steve Kerr has led the Warriors to face the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA Finals every season he's been a head coach for the Golden State Warriors. True or false? That's true. That's true. It's true.
You can win $1,300 on Warriors Trivia Takedown tonight at 5:20, only on 95.7. The Game. Joe Lowendibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Happy Friday. A couple reminders. You will hear from Steve Kerr this morning at about 8:18. 1 hour before that, right around 7:20, that's the next opportunity for you to win a trip to Hawaii. However, the only chance you'll have of hearing your name called is if you go to the website, 957thegame.com, and register. So if you haven't done that yet, do so. We'll call a name today at 7:20 and then every day next week at 7:20. To the phones we go. Two-time Super Bowl champion, eight-time Pro Bowler, and former Denver Broncos safety. You can catch him now as the co-host of First and 10 on Orange and Blue 760 in Denver. The great Steve Atwater joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Good morning, Steve, and thanks for your time. How's everything going?
Hey, what's up, fellas? Thanks for having me on. Everything's going great.
Good to hear, and we appreciate it as always. Let's begin with this. The key news out of Denver this week was that wide receiver Emmanuel Sanders was lost for the year with an Achilles injury after slipping at practice. How big of a blow is that to this Denver offense?
Well, it's definitely a big blow. Emmanuel's leadership and work ethic is second to none. He's one of the only guys that I've ever seen that consistently at practice when the defense is up and the offense is, getting the break. He's catching balls the whole time, doing everything he can to be the best wide receiver possible. And they're going to miss that. But a lot of the young guys have learned from Emmanuel's ways, and they're doing some of the same things. And fortunately for the Denver Broncos, the wide receiver room, in my opinion anyway, is one of our deepest positions. So, Although we're going to miss him, we do have some guys that can step in and play at a high level.
Who are the guys that you think will step in and fill the void for Sanders now that he's out? Who should 49er fans be most concerned about come Sunday?
Well, in my opinion, I think it would be Deshaun Hamilton and Tim Patrick. And those are two guys that Deshaun Hamilton, coming out of Penn State, he's their leading wide receiver in terms of receptions, all-time leader in receptions there at Penn State. He's a guy who really quick, has a good short area quickness, yeah, good speed, great hands. He's been pretty much paying his dues, doing a lot of blocking here the last few weeks, and it'll be good for him to get some targets, and I think that'll make him feel good as well because, again, he's been working hard doing a lot of the grunt work. And Tim Patrick, he's a guy that went to the University of Utah. He was on the team late last year, and then this year he's been active for all the games and in preseason. He had a great preseason, great training camp, been able to see him compete against our defensive backs and then other teams in the preseason. Really gave the coaches confidence that he could play, and just for me seeing him, he's a legit wide receiver. So that room is pretty deep in my opinion, and I think we'll continue to do well as long as everyone's on the same page.
Steve, is the game being hurt when you watch games like last night and you see Derrick Henry go for 99 yards, 20 missed tackles? You see the week before the Texan 90 some. The game, because of so many things, it's going into a pass-happy league. Have you seen tackling? Is it suffering now, and why?
You know what? Some games are. As you know, you turn on one game and you'll see bad tackling. It looks like guys aren't going full speed and not giving 100% effort. And then you turn on another game and you see guys scrambling all over the place, playing like their life depends on it. It's kind of up and down, and it's week to week. Because last week, Jacksonville, they came out and played really good defense, but it looked like they didn't want any parts of Derrick Henry.
Yep.
That's how people used to do you like that too, man. Nobody want to tackle a low deal.
Steve Atwater with us here on 95.7 The Game. Steve, the game you played in, the game Lowe played in versus today, very, very different, as you two have touched on. If you were roaming secondaries now, how would you adjust your game to fit within the rules? I mean, nobody wanted to come across the middle against you,
no.
But now you wouldn't be able to get away with that style of play in this modern age of the NFL.
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest problem would have been the hidden defenseless players because, back in the day, we tried to time it up when the ball is getting there. You want to make contact to try and separate receivers from the ball. And, a lot of times it would be some helmet-to-helmet contact. And knowing what we know now, though, knowing how devastating that could be to players, both the person who hits the receiver and the receiver, it's just not the smart way to do it. And although I don't like how sometimes we have a lack of physicality in the game, I understand that part. But, lack of physicality doesn't necessarily mean that you just let guys go and, it's soft football. You still can get body on body without hitting guys in the head and without using your helmet. Dallas Cowboys, they showed us that. I would say even Denver Broncos the last several weeks, man, they've come out and played good, solid football. I noticed in our secondary, guys just been a lot more physical. And so it's not all lost, but, yeah, certainly some games when you turn on, makes you want to turn off the TV.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Is it difficult now for players to learn the proper technique because of the collective bargaining agreement preventing players and coaches from really doing a lot of padded work? Is that as much of a factor as the rule changes?
Yeah, I talked to some people, and they say, hey, guys at this age, they've been tackling their whole lives. They know how to do it. They don't necessarily need to practice, but man, to me, in my opinion, it definitely hurts players because I couldn't imagine going all week not tackling anybody and then just one day a week going full speed, bringing that guys to the ground, and you haven't been on the ground in 7 days. Yeah. I just couldn't imagine. I know how difficult it would be for me, and I can't imagine how big of an impact it really has on the game, not being able to really had that physicality in practice. And I also think that's why we're getting so many injuries nowadays. Heck, we got 12, 13 guys in IR, and I look at other injury lists, it's the same thing across the league. a ton of guys on IR, and it may have been that way back in my day. I haven't researched it to see, but it seems like just a lot more injuries going on these days.
Has Denver taken a lot of pride? Because it seems like they're one and still one of the teams, them along with Baltimore, of course, Dallas, that are still going to have a conscious effort of saying, we're going to be physical. We're going to make you tackle. Can you see Denver still one of those teams? And what do you think about the Niners?
Yeah, well, I think so. We've had some injuries, and we had some games early in the season, in particular that game against the New York Jets, and a couple of games where offenses they ran pretty good on us. And we were playing a lot of nickel and dime defenses in those games, but still, regardless of who you have on the field, if your team and defense has a mentality that you're going to be physical, just you don't let those things happen. But I'm really proud of the way the guys have fought back again, especially over the last 3 weeks. Been extremely physical. Everybody's getting to the ball, and I think it starts there. And I can say the same thing for San Francisco. They've had some injuries as well, but when you turn on the film, these guys are playing hard. And the message that I know the coaches are trying to get across to our players that, hey, we've won three games. Everything, things are going fairly well, even though we've had the injuries to Chris Harris Jr. and to Emmanuel Sanders. Things have been going well. We're favored in the game. You can't listen to that nonsense. You still got to go out here and play like we're on a five-game losing streak and we're playing for our lives, absolutely. San Francisco 49ers, they can beat you. They're going to come out. They're going to play hard. They're going to be in their home stadium, and they're not going to want to lose this game. So, they can tackle. They can get after it just as well as we can, the Broncos can.
Two-time Super Bowl champ Steve Atwater with us here on 95.7 The Game. One of the key matchups for both Bronco fans and 49er fans to watch this weekend will be rookie right tackle Mike McGlinchey, the 49ers' first-round draft pick, going up against one of the league's premier pass rushers in Von Miller. I mean, you've had a front-row seat to Von Miller and how dominant he has been. How does McGlinchey go about trying to limit the role, the effect Miller has on this game?
Hey, man, he's just going to have quick feet and quick hands, and, he's going to have his work cut out for him. Von is a dominant player, and he changes his pace of play sometimes. He'll go super fast. Sometimes he'll slow it down to kind of bait linemen into thinking, all right, he's going to, he's not going that fast. And then all of a sudden, bam, he's by you, and, the contortions that he's able to do with his body is just amazing to me. I've never seen a player be able to do some of the things that he does. He's going to have his hands full. I would imagine McGlinchey knows that. He's played against some very good edge rushers this season, and even when he was in college. So I know he knows he's going to have his hands full, and I think they'll have him ready to play.
Two-time Super Bowl champ, eight-time Pro Bowler, and former Denver Broncos safety. You can catch him now as the co-host of First and 10 on Orange and Blue 760 in Denver. The great Steve Atwater with us here on 95.7 The Game. Steve, we appreciate the time this morning. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Enjoy the game this weekend. Hopefully we can do it again in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on, guys. Have a great day. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you, too. Thank you, Steve.
Be good, Steve.
That matchup between McGlinchey and Von Miller. Remember, Jerick McKinnon out for the season. Matt Breida won't play.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about running backs helping, running backs chipping, but right. You don't have, your top running backs in there to help. This is going to be a big matchup. How would you be game planning to make sure Miller doesn't absolutely destroy Nick Mullins?
Well, I think that you, as McGlinchey, a rookie, he's going to know that he's just as strong. He knows that he's strong, just as strong as Von Miller. He knows Von Miller is going to have to beat him with speed, technique, and different things, and that's what Von has made a living on. So I think McGlinchey at times, Joe, he's going to have to jump out, boom, quick set him. Quick set him a couple times and don't necessarily give ground, because when he does, sometimes that's when, he can drop the shoulder, get Gumby-like. So sometimes you're going to have to mix it up. I think McGlinchey's going to have to mix up his pass sets, sometimes jump on him, jump outside real quick and grab him, try to lock onto him, at times going to get back, making sure the running back's there, and understand the importance of the running back is going to chip him back inside. Tell that, make sure the running back and McGlinchey is on the same page when he says, look, I have your outside shoulder, so you do not let him beat underneath or spin underneath. So they're going to work in tandem together with the running back, and at times you'll see the tight end come over to the same side. But he's going to have his hands full. It is going to be an all-day sucker, and I tell you right now, you get up for games like this all week long. McGlinchey's been having nightmares. He's been thinking about this guy. This is going to be the best pass rusher that he's seen.
And it's got to be a lot of tape study, too, for McGlinchey, because Von Miller has so many different moves. Like you say, there's the Gumby move. Steve Atwater was talking about his ability to get so low. So he'll bend you to the outside. He'll fake to the outside and spin you to the middle. He'll swim you. He'll chop you. He'll bull rush you. He really has the entire package, doesn't he?
He really does. And that's why you got to sometimes quick set him, jump on him quick, bam, grab him real quick. Don't retreat. And at times, then you know when that running back's there, you got to keep that inside foot hard in the ground and understand that that running back's going to have your outside, because Von Miller's going to push that outside and then he's going to come underneath. And if you turn, once you turn your shoulders, you're gone. So he's got to make sure he stays square and come down that and come make sure he's coming straight back and don't allow him to get beat underneath. So it's going to be tough. McGlinchey's going to have his hands full all day.
I was in Mobile, Alabama, 2011 for the Senior Bowl when Von Miller was there.
Yeah.
And this is the draft class where Cam Newton went one overall. Miller goes two. Marcel Darius three to Buffalo. And Newton wasn't there, obviously. But Miller was there along with a lot of other guys. And I remember the moment where any potential scout, front office executive, or coach realized all of a sudden Von Miller is now a top five pick. Because we all know how this works. It starts earlier and earlier now because the internet continues to become more and more available to anyone who wants to be a scout or have a website or talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
But back then, even though it was 2011, the way it worked was sometime in December, you started to see the surfacing of mock drafts, and you started to get these lists of who would be the top players in the draft class. And you always knew the quarterbacks because it's an obvious position, but you were only so aware of the other positions, wide receivers, corners, all that good stuff. So coming down to Mobile in late January, I think some people knew who Von Miller was, but it wasn't a widespread name as a top five selection. And the key to Senior Bowl week, it's not the game. No one cares about the game. What people don't realize is that almost all the scouts and all the people who are down there working that event, come Thursday morning, they're gone. They leave town Wednesday night. They do all their interviews. They go to all the practices, the media sessions, then they're out of there. And then, you know, there's the walkthrough on Thursday and there's some other stuff and there's the game, but no one cares about that. The NFL teams care about Sunday's weigh-ins and practices, Tuesday's practices, Wednesday's practices. The one-on-ones are the key.
Right.
You want to see the pass rushers against the offensive line. You want to see the corners against the receivers. You want to see the quarterbacks in 7-on-7, the arm strength, and you know how they lead, stuff like that. And I remember there was a one-on-one, and I cannot remember who the offensive tackle was, but there were some good ones down there. And Miller flashed the Gumby move, where he came across on the outside, and he got so low with his bend, he was limboing. He was limboing. He was that low.
Like
his legs, his knees were about 3-4 inches off the ground. He was leaning back, and he had cut all the way around to the point where this was an athletic offensive tackle who was trying to push him down. But he moved so quick around him, like the Matrix, couldn't stop him. And I just remember looking around at that
and
moment.
And everyone's like.
And everyone starts taking notes. Everyone starts talking. You hear a whole bunch of, whoa.
He's a bender.
Von Miller, limbo.
He's a bender. He's a bender. That's what they call him. He's a bender.
His shoulder almost touches the ground while his feet are still flat, and he's dipping so low. I can't imagine seeing that at the Senior Bowl.
That was the moment.
And it's like, oh. People like catching their breath, and then you look quick to your left and your right, hoping that no other scout saw it.
And that's no one. It's not like that's the only thing taking place on the field. There's one-on-ones and workouts taking place everywhere. That happened, and I remember that night and the next morning, all of a sudden,
Everyone's talking, there were all these
Von Miller write-ups. Hey, Von Miller could be the best player in the draft class. Just saying, I've been evaluating him. They saw this move, and right there, it was like, damn. I remember I was sitting next to Matt Bowen, former NFL safety, who now works for ESPN. It's a good friend. He's come on the show. He just sat there. He goes, that's rare. You can't teach
that. Bending.
You can't have
he's
that kind of flexibility as something you coach. Here's a problem for the Niners. Okay, sure. Account for Miller. Maybe you have a good day against him. Maybe you limit the carnage he causes over 60 minutes on Sunday. Oh, by the way, Bradley Chubb's on the other side. The rookie pass rusher at NC State, he's got 10 sacks this year.
Wow.
10 sacks from Bradley Chubb already. He's no joke. That's going to be Joe Staley's responsibility. And maybe Staley's able to hold up one-on-one, but damn, Denver's coming.
And they may have some of the best pass rushers. Their backup passer. 48. Shane is a hell of a. He's a. He can go get it.
Shane Ray.
Absolutely.
At Mizzou.
He is a baller. And so he's got sacks this year. So when you're talking about pass rushers, they got a plethora of them, and they're going to keep them coming.
And you can only chip one guy with the running back.
Yeah,
I mean, Juszczyk can't be back there chipping one side and then run over and chip the other guy. There's no time for that. It's going to be interesting to see, especially when you talk about the guards, Lake and Tomlinson, who had a really bad game last week, and how healthy he'll be, and whether or not Weston Richburg is going to be totally healthy. And this offensive line could get punished.
And really what makes it really tough is not having Breida, like you just talked about, Joe, because Breida, now you don't have that edge runner who left. He's averaging over 6 yards a carry to the outside, getting on the perimeter. He puts a lot of pressure on those defenders, and now you don't have your back that is really, really a great back, especially when you're talking about perimeter runs. You don't have him, so it's going to be interesting because the Niners do need to run the ball in order for their play action.
I'd consider playing the over on the sack prop for this game. Probably about 5.5 sacks. Will there be more or less than 5.5 total sacks in the game between both teams? Niners could probably get to Keenum once or twice. I have a feeling the Broncos might get to Mullins once or twice.
Yeah.
Boom, there's your over.
That's a good one.
A reminder for next week. For everyone listening right now, next week is a thank you for how awesome you guys are and for how much we love you and the continued support you have shown this and all the other programs here at 95.7 The Game. We're doing a ton of giveaways, right? Ton of giveaways. Concert tickets, sports tickets, gift cards. One person's even going to win the grand prize, which is a pair of tickets to the Christmas Day game between LeBron James and the Lakers and the Golden State Warriors. Here's how it's going to work. It's going to be right around 8:18 in the morning and 4:18 in the afternoon. So Joe Lowe and Dibs and Damon Bruce, every day next week, Monday through Friday, there will be giveaways at 8:18 in the morning and 4:18 in the afternoon, right in that general area. Concert tickets, sports tickets, and again, grand prize, tickets to the Christmas Day game between the Lakers and the Warriors. Not bad.
That's
not
a
bad
good grand prize. That's, you know, the only drawback would be trying to sell that to the rest of the family that, hey, I won this grand prize and I'm out for Christmas, but it could work out.
Well, that's that prize there. That's a great Christmas gift, whatever it may be. That's friggin' awesome.
It's an afternoon game.
Absolutely.
You wake up, you do all the things you need to do, and then you quietly slip out the back door.
Take the family. Absolutely. Have some fun.
I don't know if it's 4 or 5 tickets. Yeah. I'm not really sure. It might just be 2. Maybe so what do you do if you have children?
Tell the kids, put them on pay no mind. Get the grandparents probably.
Wow, that's not very Christmassy.
No, the grandparents are usually there, I imagine. When people use it,
not in my scenario. They live on the East Coast. One's battling health concerns. The other ones are here now, and they're going to be gone. So
okay, well,
now that we've gone down this rabbit hole, you know, if we're not going to be able to take the whole family,
then you're right. If you don't have the grandparents or someone there, then you're absolutely right.
Tough situation.
It's a very tough situation.
But don't let us suck the fun out of it.
No.
7:20 this morning. 7:20 this morning again. The next name will be called for the Hawaii contest. The opportunity for you to win a chance to take 3 friends, family members, people you hate. I don't care. Whoever it is, you can take them to Hawaii if you win 7:20 this morning. Yesterday, Richard Sherman, one of the lone bright spots on this defense this season, had some interesting things to say about how much longer he wants to play professional football and the plan for playing professional football into the future. Take a listen.
I think 35 is probably my cutoff.
No idea it was going to start like that. Sherman.
When it's time to change.
That is not putting Richard in a kind light.
No.
I have to say, that is not a kind light.
We'll have to blame the editor for that one.
Wow. You just launched that. Woo.
That's one of your drops now, Dibs. I imagine you say, cut that.
Let's cut that.
Yeah, all right. There you go.
Let me get that out.
I mean, I want to listen
screen.
To the audio, but I need to prepare myself for that one.
I think 35 is probably my cutoff. I don't think I want to play. They'd have a hard time getting me out the bed at 35 to go play. So I think I got about 4 or 5 more in me. And, you know, at some point, everybody makes a transition to safety. And you know, if you're smart enough to play that game, and I'll probably do that in a couple of years or, you know, whenever the team needs.
Interesting. Sherman wants to play 4 or 5 more years. He's currently 30 years old. He'll turn 31 in March. He's got 2 years left on his deal with the Niners. We can break that down in more detail in just a bit, but he's already thinking ahead. I want to get a few more years out of it, but eventually all corners, if they want to extend that career, want to move to safety. One corner who moved to safety and had a hell of a lot of success doing it, Charles Woodson. Has Richard Sherman talked to Charles Woodson about this?
It's definitely something I've looked at and something I've talked to him about. Because a lot of times in this game, you playing corner, you can see the whole field, but you really only see like half the field. And at free safety, you get to see the whole field. You get to make an impact. You always see where the ball goes. You know, at corner, I've had games where I haven't got a look or thrown at. And at safety, you can see exactly where the ball goes. You can make an impact. You can find a way. You can get in on every tackle just about because you're in the center of everything, kind of like a mic. But it's something that I'm definitely going to consider later in my career, and hopefully I'll be just as good there.
Let's start the conversation with this. If Sherman can stay healthy and he continues to have the desire to play football, making the transition from corner to safety, do you see him having success?
Yeah, I do, and I think that Sherman's realist guy. Plants the seed. He's got a 2-3 year deal. He's like, all right, hey, whatever the team wants. He understands, you know, he's not going to be as fast anymore, and he's not going to be able to be a lockdown corner. So he puts that out there. He says, hey, look, sometimes they don't even throw at me. At safety, I can roam. I could be a part of it. Richard Sherman's a physical player. The guy puts his head in there. He knows how to tackle. He's a good tackler, you know, at times. So you can say, okay, can this guy, does he have the body? He's 6'3". He's rangy. He's big enough. He can tackle. He can play down in the box. So he checks all the boxes, what you need for a safety. So I think Richard Sherman, the transition, it's going to be seamless.
I think it's testimony to his ability that he's been able to play corner, considering the body that he has is much more of a safety's body. Like you're saying, a rangy guy who can play physically, he's got the speed to come up and make stops in the run game, yet he's so good as a cover corner that he's been able to thrive as a corner. So I think even more so than even Charles Woodson, he's probably ready-made. He's built to make the transition to safety.
Yeah, and I think also what you're talking about, a tight end. Think about now you can put him down on a tight end because he's 6'3", he can run, he can jump with the guy. He's just as tall as a tight end, so absolutely.
You know, we haven't done this at any point this year so far, which is kind of surprising, but it just came to me. They signed him this offseason. Everyone got excited, and then we talked about, you know, turkey on the 50, how will the fans respond, and then we started to get into the on-field performance. Will he be ready for week one? How will he play? Will he live up to the contract? Will he meet his bonuses? Here we are, December 7th, end of the season, getting set for week 14 against Denver. How would you grade Richard Sherman this year? Not as a signing, but just how would you grade his performance on the field? We spent the whole summer wondering whether or not he was going to be able to contribute. How would you grade him?
I would give him a B, shaded toward a B minus, but I'd give him a solid B because his availability, and we know that availability is everything, and he's missed some games. But when he's been out there, he's been pretty much locked down. He's gotten beat a couple of times. We can remember 2 or 3 plays where he got burned, but exactly. You compare that to the other members of the secondary, they'd be lucky to only have been burned 2 or 3 times in the year. So I got him as a B.
Has he exceeded your expectations?
He's met them, Joe. He's met them.
Met your expectations. Okay,
he's
very
met
fair.
Them.
How do you see it? Are you as strict and disciplined when you're grading as Dibs? Or is this going to be a loosey-goosey?
Do you give out A's like Halloween candy? Or you're usually pretty accurate.
I usually grade harder than Dibs. I think we know that. And it's been proven that I grade harder than Dibs. But I'm going to give a better grade than Dibs is alluding to. I think if you look around the national, you look around the Association, National Football League, and you see how many corners have gotten picked on and gotten beat. Richard Sherman played bad against Tampa Bay. That was probably his worst game. So I don't think that Richard Sherman is deserving of a low B. I think that it's closer to a high B, B plus, or maybe an A minus. The minus is because availability. He's missed several games. But you would have to give him higher than a B because the guy has been solid. He has locked down guys. He's made guys throw other side. I think he's been very, very solid.
10 games this season, he has been targeted just 31 times. So he's facing about 3.1 passes his way per game. Of those 31 targets, only 18 have been completed. Only 18 for a grand total of 305 yards and one touchdown. If you take out that one play where he kind of got roasted by Mike Evans a little bit, which is going to happen. Yeah. Mike Evans is a great wide receiver. That really cuts down those numbers. There are only two corners who are putting up better numbers, and one of them is Levi Wallace from Buffalo. He's only played 3 games, so his numbers grade out a little bit better because of his extraordinarily small sample size. Tre'Davious White, the corner in Buffalo, has played 12 games this season. His numbers grade out better in terms of opponent quarterback rating, which is interesting because I believe he was on the board for the Raiders, and they chose Garyon Conley over the LSU corner, Tre'Davious White. Just throwing that out there because there were a lot of corners available. It was a very tricky decision at the time. So you've got a guy in Richard Sherman with 2 years left on his deal talking about long-term future. Wants to play 4 or 5 more years. Wants to make the transition to safety because naturally, if he's going to hang on for 4 or 5 more years, it probably won't be as a corner. No one's ever accused that guy of being dumb or ignorant because he is as smart as they come. Great education, well-spoken. He understands the game both on and off the field. 2 years left on the deal. Now, the Niners have an out after this season, which would make this a 1 year, $8.2 million deal, essentially, and it'd have $2 million in dead cap space. Does anyone see the Niners trying to get out of this deal, though? This guy has been, however either of you wants to grade him, he's been one of, if not the best defenders on the roster.
Without a doubt. Richard Sherman's going, I mean, people might not think so, and Pro Bowl, I don't look at it as but he's probably going this year. He's got 10 games. He's going to play 11, 12, 13, 14 games this year. He's probably going to go. The guy, say what you want. People don't target his way. Why? It's because they're afraid of him, wherever it may be. The guy's been pretty solid this year. So without a doubt, no way they're going to let this guy go.
Tibbs, you feel the same way?
Yeah. On a defense where you know that you probably need 5 or 6 new players, you need a couple pass rushers, you need linebacker help, and you already need corner help. To me, it makes no sense to try to get out from underneath a contract that's really not that bad for a guy who's probably your second best defender behind DeForest Buckner.
$10 million cap hit next year. $10 million cap hit the following year, and then it's done. The idea, do you see him finishing his career as a 49er? Do you think if he's able to make the transition to safety, I think most of us feel that if he stays healthy, he can probably do that and perform at an admirable level. I don't think it would cost that much 2 years down the road to re-up him. Let's be honest. He's going to get the tail end of the career.
It's going to be less than what he's making now. I think that this guy finished his career here. I think if you look at it, I think you let him at times. I think you still go get another lockdown corner this next year, and now you got two. Now Richard moves back to safety after next year, moves back to safety for that 1 year, and you give him a 3-year extension or 2-year extension because now he can do it. I see nothing wrong with that. I think that'd be a good business decision.
Yeah, I think you're right. After next year, you probably tear up the contract, you tear up the last year, and you give him a 3 or 4 year deal, knowing that he's going to be a safety, so you pay him as a safety.
Right.
Probably pay him as a safety plus. You're not going to give him just run-of-the-mill safety money.
Yeah.
Get him a 3 or 4 year deal. Indicate to him that we know that you've only got 3 or 4 years left. We want it to be here. You played college at Stanford, and he really has connected with the 49er fan base. And you think about Turkey on the 50 and all the John with Crabtree. I wouldn't have imagined that it would have gone this well, but through his play and the fact that really you don't have much else on the defense, 49er fans would love to see him stick and stay.
Think of it like this as well. It's a long-term investment. And I'm not saying long-term from a football perspective where maybe he finishes off his career here and plays 4 more years. I'm thinking you want someone like this as a part of your organization for as long as he's willing to be a part of your organization. You just don't want him on the field. If he wants to get into coaching, would you not want Richard Sherman on your staff? If he wants to work in pro personnel, or maybe say to himself, you know what, maybe I envision myself making the transition in the front office one day, but like most individuals, you realize I don't have a lot of experience, so I'd have to learn. Wouldn't you want to bring him into the fold? Wouldn't you want him as an ambassador to the team? Everything about the guy speaks to what you want. High character, intelligent, hard worker. The real knocks against him are what? He was too passionate in Seattle and got upset when Pete Carroll was throwing the ball on the goal line. I'm not going to ding you for that. In the day and age of Reuben Foster, Kareem Hunt, and all that stuff, I'm not going to ding you for anything like that. If you're too emotional and